Welcome, everybody. We're happy to have you all here this morning. I have to apologize for the hat stuff, but I have helmet hair, so we biked to the station and then came down, and so came with Mark Benigni, and that was a lot of fun. And so glad we made it all right.
This is certainly a meeting where you're allowed to do that and encouraged to, by the way. So if anybody else is feeling pressure to come and their work clothes, don't.
Just come. You can look just like me. So raise your hand if you bike down here. Awesome.
Bike and front runner?
Well, yeah, that works. That's great. Great to see. So, okay, so we'll begin our meeting as June 12th, 2019, and the time is 9:50, correct? Okay. We'll begin with go around the table and introduce yourselves. I'm Joe Shovlin, Mayor of South Weber City and Chair of this committee. We'll start over here with Katie.
Katie Turner, Wasatch Front staff. Nicole Bruin, Wasatch Front staff.
Kurt Granberg with WFRC's Analytics Group.
Joe Taylor, DC Planning Action,
Yates. Jeff Weather, Davis County.
Jim Price, MAG, and Utah County.
Heidi Goodhart with UDOT Planning.
Katie Witt, Kaysville Mayor.
Mary Pratt, WFRC.
Hugh Van Wagen, Wasatch Front.
Jeff Silverstream, Mill Creek.
Phil Sarnoff, Utah.
Helen Peters, Transportation Program Manager, Salt Lake County.
Daryl Valentine, today, Morgan County.
Norm Squirrel, Riverdale City.
John Cardillo, Stockton Mayor.
Michael Rolfe, Salt Lake City Transportation.
Justin Anderson, Ogden City.
Okay, and then over in back here on the corner.
Tim Parks with Morax Engineers.
Christopher Chestnut, UDOT Planning.
Matt Sample, UDOT Planning.
Eric John, Salt Lake County, Bicycle Electric Queen.
Mark Bradley, Griffin City.
Vice Millwright, Millwright City.
Dave Elfis, Cycling and Tom.
Jay Foster, Council Planning and Insight.
Mac Kazaya, Council Planning and Insight.
Heather Reyes, CNTA. Canal Berkeley, the Davis County Health Department.
Daniel Pena, Salt Lake County.
Kale Jordan, Salt Lake County.
Ben Bolte, Green Bay.
Anna Lockridge, Green Bay.
Clay Christians, Weber Pathways.
Blake Thomas, Southern City.
Alex Berry, Wasatch Front staff.
Spellberg, Wasatch Front staff.
Lauren McDermott, Wasatch Front staff.
Patrick Gillespie, Salt Lake County Health Department.
Jared Stewart, Salt Lake County.
Greg Kobia, Physician Services.
Mark Benigni, Weber Pathways.
Joey Fox.
Kim Posey, Sherwood County Health.
Ed Hacker with Wasatch Front Regional Council staff.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you here this morning. We'll begin with item approving the minutes from April 10th, 2019 meeting. Are there any comments on the minutes? Okay, then I will entertain a motion, and when you give a motion in a second, if you could state your name, because I'm still learning names, I would really appreciate that. I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
I'll move to approve the minutes. Heidi Goodhart.
Thank you, Heidi. Do I have a second?
Second, Daryl Valentine.
Daryl? All right. All in favor? Yes, when you speak, please turn on your mic and speak into the mic. And then when you're not speaking, turn it off so that the people up there can hear them. All right, any opposed? Okay, motion carries then. We'll now move to the public comments. Please state your name and limit your comments to 2 minutes or less. We're now open for public comment. Yes.
Please.
Could you use your mic, please? Thank you.
Becca Rolfe with Salt Lake City Transportation, and I just wanted to let everyone know that we've just recently published in collaboration with Salt Lake County, UDOT, UTA, University of Utah, the latest edition of the Salt Lake City and County Bike Map. And so I have copies of them that I'll hand out and just hand around, and if you would take one, that would be great. And I also wanted to thank Dave Iltis from Cycling Utah for bringing them and reminding me to distribute them. Dave has been assisting in doing the distribution to all of the bike shops that they distribute Cycling Utah to. And also Jared Stewart from the county helped in getting all of the county-wide data together. And so that is really critical in order for us to be able to publish this map. It's updated since the 2017 map, so any new bike routes that have been constructed since 2017 are now incorporated into this map. And we also typically look forward a year and give people an idea what facilities are coming and likely to be under construction during the duration of this map. It's published every 2 years. We are looking at doing a more electronic version in the future. So
we brought a big box with us today, and so Jared has that, and
okay.
So as you leave, you can get some more too. And
okay,
great.
Thank you. All right, other public comment. Yes, could you come to the mic if you would, please? Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Elliot Mont. I'm a recreation enthusiast who leads a lot of rides on a volunteer basis, rides plus hikes and kayak trips. When this committee first convened under Commissioner Downs, I spoke about a concern I have about goathead thorns. If you're a rider, they're a real issue, and since then, they haven't gotten any better. The conditions pretty much got worse. So I'd like to propose this morning a different tactic. In the past, we've done pulls of weeds. We get volunteer organizers to go out and pull weeds and collect them. I'd like the committee to consider placing a bounty on goathead thorns to incentivize groups, Boy Scouts, church groups, individuals, the homeless, to go out and collect them and be rewarded for that. For such a program to work, we need a multi-jurisdictional body such as this one, or perhaps the Jordan River Commission, to be the center point to organize it and to control it. So I throw that idea out to you to consider creating a bounty as a mechanism to control goathead thorns. That was my comment. Thank you for the time.
Tula Valley Pathway, and Tim Sullivan with Township presented that at a previous meeting. And it's a short segment, but you know what? You got to start somewhere, so we've got to start, and I'm excited for that. Brett McKiff with Utah Department of Health, we, through some of our grants we have, we got a video, tell me, videography, right? What is it called? Yes, and so we're going to see if we can do something to coordinate that. So it's not necessarily that anybody needs to come out to it. We'd love if they could, but it's a really short segment, but it's exciting for us. So hopefully we can maybe do a little video segment of it and kind of show the rest of the state kind of what we're trying to do out there. I'm working fast and furiously to try to see if we can get some more funding to try to get more of that segment going and kind of get everything kicked off. So just some exciting news. So we're trying, you know, if I could have a machine like in the show The Lorax where he just makes, you know, a pathway, I would just be doing that. But, you know, I can't do that. So anyway, we're excited for it. It's a neat section. It's a road that was closed off that it really kind of takes you back in time if you ride your bike along it. So there's no traffic on it. It's, you know, through a little, there's a creek through it, and it's through some farm fields, so it kind of takes you back in time. So it's a nice section that we've dedicated, and so I look forward to everybody possibly going through it one day and looking at it. So anyway, I just thought I'd let everybody know.
Thank you.
morning. Mark Benigni from Weaver Pathways. Just wanted to extend an invitation to you all to join us for our third annual Trail Fest celebration, which is on June 22nd. It's a celebration of the connection of the Weaver Parkway, the Ogden River Parkway, and Bonneville Shoreline Trail. There's 24 checkpoints around the circuit, and it's a great family event. You pick up a passport at the trailheads, and with the passport, you'll get a stamp at each trailhead you go through. You're eligible for a drawing at the amphitheater at 1 o'clock. Farmers Market starts that weekend, so there's going to be a lot of energy downtown Ogden. Information's on our website at weaverpathways.org, so we welcome you all there. And just a small comment, Mayor Solblum and I rode down on the front runner today. I don't ride the train much with my bike, or at all, but with my bike especially. And I noticed how popular the bike racks are, and I've heard before that a new design is coming in. If there's an opportunity at this meeting to get an update, that'd be great. I want it to be implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Any further public comment?
Hello, my name is Eric Kran, and I'm wearing two hats today. I'm representing Unite for CH, it's a small community group in the Cottonwood Heights area, as well as LA County Bicycle Advisory Committee. I was tasked by the committee to coordinate with public entities and community groups around this valley. And obviously I took on first charge to go home and find a public group and coordinate with the city to look at the UDOT-EIS project that's going on right now for Little Cottonwood Canyon. And some of the interesting things that are going on within the urban segment, which is from the gravel pit, if you're familiar in that area, the Cottonwood Canyon, to the split between Little Cottonwood Canyon and Wasatch as it divides towards Lakai Restaurant. We are working with the city to try to implement within their own master plan active transportation and protected bike lanes, as well as protected street crossings. So the intent is to bring along groups, every group available, UDOT and everybody else, and coordinating towards trying to implement a better way, not just to get through, but to get across as well for the local community so that they can get the first and last mile public transit, going to school, and commute within the city there. If anybody has any ideas, welcome to try to actually get the ball rolling and the conversation going. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Eric. Any further public comment? Okay. Then we'll move to our chair report. Like Mark said, I coerced Mark into coming this morning, left my home before 7 o'clock a.m. this morning to get down here. And we rode bikes to the transit, to the train. And a couple of weeks ago, I was supposed to go on a BRT tour down in Provo. And I went down and I got to the Farmington station nice and early, and I had no idea what I was doing yet. Well, needless to say, I missed the train
or the boat
or whatever you call it anyway. And so, but today I successfully boarded Front Runner. So that was the first time for everything. And if I can do it, then any of you can do it. So anyway, that worked out great. Also, we had Golden Smoke last month, which was awesome and really good. And we had a lot of people here participate in that. We're so grateful for that. I'm so grateful to UDOT, Wasatch Front Regional Council, and other organizations that helped put that on. It was really enjoyable. So thank you so much. Like Mark Benigni said, the racks in the bike section of the Front Runner. Does anyone have an update on when those racks are going to be changed to the new style? Anyone here?
I know that we've purchased them. I don't know exactly when they're going in, but I would certainly have to reach out and find out and update this group on that. Unless, Heather, you know.
Okay.
We'll find out for you.
That would be great. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that. All right, we'll move to item number 5, which is our regional transportation plan, active transportation overview, and Hugh will turn the time over to him.
many of you know and were around when the regional transportation plan, the 2019 to 2050 plan, was adopted by the Wasatch Front Regional Council a couple weeks ago. So just to give an update to this group and those that haven't participated in that directly, we'll go over that. And the regional transportation plan is part of, turn this on, there we go, a sort of framework within Wasatch Choice 2050, something that's been ongoing for a number of years now. There's an economic development portion of this, a land use portion, which all of you as local officials are directly in charge of, and then the transportation portion, right, the RTP itself. And so, quick overview. Back in 2015, the council adopted 10 vision goals, livable and healthy communities, access to economic and educational opportunities, manageable and reliable traffic conditions, quality transportation choices, safe user-friendly streets, clean air, housing choices, and affordable living expenses, fiscally responsible communities, infrastructure, sustainable environment, including water, agricultural, and other natural resources, ample parks, open space, and recreational opportunities. So several of these have a direct tie to active transportation, and most of them have at least an indirect tie. So it's within this framework of the projects for the next 30 years were considered. So again, I mentioned this is a four-year process starting in 2015, started with exploring what are the goals, again, was just shown, what kind of scenarios can get created to meet these goals, how do they play out as far as performance measures, and then eventually drafting a preferred scenario and endorsing that scenario. That happened in 2018. And then prioritizing the projects, again, this is a 30-year plan, 31 years. So there's phase one, which is the first 11 years, phase two from 2031 to 2040, and then phase three, 2041 to 2050, and putting those projects based on need, and then financially constraining them based on the revenue that's projected to come in for transit roadways and active transportation. AT is a little bit unique in that it doesn't need to be financially constrained. The pots of money are a little bit different there and the federal requirements. And so all of the AT projects were based on need and communication with those of you in this room and several other partners. So just brief overview, there's 630 some odd projects in the plan for active transportation. This is bikeways, does not include any sidewalk projects. We didn't get down to that granular of a level for this regional plan. Over 1,000 miles, again, of linear projects. And there's also point projects, is what we call an intersection project, crossing projects that Mr. Cron mentioned before, protected intersections, overhead, underground crossings, anything that will get people across major facilities safely. Again, you can look at these maps here. What I'm going to show you now, and over about $460 million worth of projects over the next 30 years. So if we can jump to the website, I'll show you just how you can take a little bit closer look at these projects. And WFRC.org, very simple. The front page will give you this splash page, and you see the dots along the bottom, right? So scroll through, and the very first dot gives you this page on the RTP. So if you click the interactive map and document box right under the main header, comes you to the splash page, the opening page for this. Scroll down, and you can either get to the document itself or to the map, and we'll just jump to the map really quickly. You can see how this works. So you can go and explore the projects that you're interested in or in your area. So up in the upper right-hand corner, there's a couple of toggle boxes. And the one with the line, yep, that one right there, gives you all these options to look at the projects and filter them the way you want to. Road, transit, bike, we're gonna turn off the road and the transit projects for our purposes today. And you can see the phasings there. And Katie, if you'll just scroll into somewhere in Davis County really quickly. Obviously, the legend tells you if it's phase one, phase two, or phase three based on color. Hopefully, nobody's colorblind. I don't know how sensitive we were to that. So apologies up front if that's the case. Shows you the land use centers. Again, talk about land use centers. and coordination there and where these projects go in. But can you just pick a project and click on an AT project? When you do that, again, over on the right-hand side, it'll pull up and say, oh, did you mean which project? Because they're kind of close. But if you click on the one you're looking for, a little drop-down box gives you the project number, the phase that it's in, the cost that it's in, the extents, right, the to and the from, and if there's any notes or a disclaimer on there, that'll also pop up. So this is a nice way to go through and look and consider the different projects in your area. Okay, any questions on that at all? Has anybody had experience? Anybody been on the map and looked at it since adoption a couple of weeks ago? Joe has. All right, great. Well, I encourage you all to do that if you can, Helen, and take a look and see what's going on in your area. And just as a quick aside, this has been adopted, and we're going to start working on the next plan, right, the 2023 plan. So if there are things that we should consider moving forward, we can certainly do that. But also know that this plan itself is not set in stone. It can be amended, it can be changed. But this is what we have as of now. Doesn't mean it can't be influenced moving forward. Thank you, Katie. So why do these matter? Certainly these projects help prioritize funding and construction of regional projects, right? There's different funding programs through Wasatch Front Regional Council and other areas, right, in the counties, well, of course, in sales tax, so these projects help inform those, what should get built first, a regional framework to support the local networks, and there's so many AT plans going on right now throughout the region, which is fantastic, and we look forward to helping those plans informing the next RTP as well. And then it also informs the unified plan. In the unified plan, Jim from MAG is going to step up here and talk about their RTP a little bit, and then Chris with UDOT is also going to talk about the long-range plan that UDOT does. So in coordination with the state and the other MPOs, right, the unified plan looks at transportation across the state, and this is going to be the fourth effort in bringing this all together. Talk about the timing, the same financial assumptions, performance measures, safety, and active transportation. So we're looking for adoption of that in the fall of 2019, and it's a great tool for the legislature as they consider transportation projects and funding moving forward. So with that, can anybody tell me where this station is? Justin got it. Anybody else? Say it loudly. Layton Station, yeah. It's a great little restaurant there too, if you ever miss a train and have a few minutes to grab a snack right there. That's all I have, and it's okay, I'm going to turn the time over to Jim. To talk about Mountland Association of Governments, RTP.
Thanks, Hugh. I told you I would keep this short and simple because I tend to get a little passionate about some of these things. And I'm glad that you gave such a comprehensive overview of the entire process, because that's essentially what we do. We and WFRC collaborate very closely on the RTP update because we share a model, we share a travel demand model, and we share the traffic and we share borders. And one of the important things that we really share is we share brain power across the border, and we suck most of it down to Utah County, but we appreciate the ability to do that. I wanted to focus on a very kind of a narrow piece of the RTP. We call it Transplan 50, and this year's plan, as far as active transportation is concerned, we want to focus on making connections. We've been developing for the last 20 years a pretty good system. It's not built out by any means. If I had infinite resources, it would be built out by now, but we have been building a pretty good system. Now we want to connect it to everything it needs to be connected to. One of the things that we really want to focus on connecting it to is transit. We want to make transit and active transportation a very strong partnership because they strengthen each other. They make transit work. It makes active transportation work. And as they're strong partners, especially in Utah County, where we are just kind of still getting our footing with transit, we need transit to work. We need it to work and work well so that we don't become overly dependent on cars in Utah County, which we've done in the past, and we're growing so fast
that congestion is fast becoming a problem, and transit and transportation are big pieces of mellowing out that congestion. One of the things that we did the last RTP is we started, and Hugh mentioned this in their RTP this time, we started looking at point projects, bridges and structures, connections that the cities have a really hard time doing because they're really expensive. Typically when you're dealing with a project that the city wants to do and they can't do it all at once, we'll phase it, we'll do phase one, phase two, phase three. We haven't yet found a way to phase a bridge over a river or over a roadway, get halfway and kind of stop. And so these are projects that we want to look at regionally and help the cities to implement, because these become regionally significant structures, if you will. The two that we included, we just started with two on our last RTP, our current RTP. One is a bridge in Provo that will connect the Intermodal Center or the Front Runner Station to new development that's going on the north side of five sets of tracks that people currently have to cross on foot. Very, very, very dangerous. And so we use the Tiger process. If most people, I assume, are fairly familiar with the Tiger project that was awarded in 2016 to all along the Wasatch Front, do projects all along the Wasatch Front. Heather is managing that and is doing a terrific job getting those going. The two bridges, the two projects that we're concerned about in Utah County are the bridge in Provo, and then this one, which, does this have a pointer?
Main big button and point it right at the TV. Very top. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Oh, very cool. Okay. So this, just to get you oriented, this is Thanksgiving Point in Lehigh. This is the point of the mountain, Draper, just up here. These red lines, this is the Jordan River Trail. This is the Murdoch Canal Trail. The Murdoch Canal Trail runs for 20 miles from the Lehigh Station, where the Jordan River actually connects, all the way down through seven cities, down to Provo Canyon, connects in the Provo River Trail, which goes all the way down through Provo and to Utah Lake, and also up to Brugmar Falls in Provo Canyon. This is also part of the Gold Spoke Network. So if any of you did the Golden Spoke ride and rode this piece of it, we hope you enjoyed that, except for the undercrossing under I-15 that's being rebuilt right now. Why this is important is that this is where Lehigh Station is for Front Runner. And we have, you can see these marked out here, this is called Traverse Mountain. There are about 30,000 residents up here. This is a small city all by itself. It's part of Lehigh. Without this bridge, there's no safe, direct, comfortable connection for these people up here to Lehigh Station. These circles, this is a quarter mile circle, the green, this is a half mile circle, this is a 2 mile circle. These are the circles that are the quarter to half mile are comfortable walking distances to transit. 2 miles is comfortable bicycling distance to transit. Without that bridge right here, these 30,000 people are essentially cut off from getting to Front Runner, except my car comfortably. With this, and this bridge is in design right now, we're about 30% design. It's a fairly expensive bridge, about $5.3 million. That's why these are regionally significant projects, because it's really hard for the smaller cities to fund these, and so we want to help them do this. This group of people, this whole community, by this time next year will have a direct connection, a direct, comfortable, safe connection to the Lehigh Station. This community over here is just getting going. This is anticipated to be about 10,000 people in this west. This is the Jordan River Trail, or Jordan River and Trail. The trail is on the other side of the river from this community, and the station is on the other side of the river from the community. There's currently a bridge down here, but if you live up in this section of the community and you want to get on the transit, you have to go down and over and across and back up. It's about 3.5 miles. It's just completely out of the out of contention for either walking or biking comfortably for most people. Simply by putting a bridge in there, it cuts it down to a quarter mile to a half mile. It's a whole different ball of wax. And so these are the connections that we're really focusing on in this RTP, in this new update. They said the other connections that we wanted to make very strongly and very directly are to transit, again, to strengthen transit. So what we did is we took all of our fixed transit stations. This is the Lehigh Front Runner, American Fork Front Runner, Orem Front Runner, and the Provo Intermodal Center. This is the Provo Front Runner Station. And then these little red ones, this is BRT. This is UVX, Utah Valley Express. These are our big fixed transit stations and centers. We know they're not going to be going anywhere. We don't want to build structures and bridges to get or trails to get people somewhere that's going to move in a few years. So that's why we focused on these. And we did this purple kind of blotch is actually a systems analysis that tells us where people live within a certain radius. And we did that so that we could then look at our R2P. And you can see the black are the existing facilities. The red are the new facilities that we're proposing. And we wanted to make sure that each of these stations had a strong element of active transportation connection into those. And we think that this will, again, over time, strengthen both. This is a very important partnership between active transportation and transit. For instance, if you live down in Provo, in this new development that is really exciting when this comes in, right across the road from, and then we'll be connected by the bridge to the transit station. If you work in Salt Lake, you can walk across the bridge or take your bike, walk with across the bridge. We're going to get on Front Runner, come all the way up to North Temple. Very easy, get on a scooter or take your bike and get to wherever you're going. It just means, as we all know, that active transportation becomes a feasible mobility model for getting long distances. And that's why these connections are so important. Okay, overall, our separated pathways, we're looking at about 213 new miles. Other facilities, including protected bike lanes, cycle tracks, buffered bike lanes, about 100 new miles of those. Total cost about $153 million. Over the next 20 years, we didn't actually put this out on a 30-year time frame. We wanted to do this on a shorter time frame. But that is our plan. Any questions, any thoughts on this?
Right. Can I just comment? I think it's great that we have so many representatives here from the entire region, because as Greg, we're all sort of growing at different rates and at different times, and so it's interesting to see where Utah County is now versus Salt Lake, Davis, Weber, Morgan, Tooele. We're all at different phases, and so we can always look to whoever's gone before us a little bit and say, okay, these are some steps and where we can project to be in the next decade or two. So I think it's really interesting. Thanks.
I'm Christopher Chestnut. My role at UDOT is the Long Range Planning Manager. So let me just jump into this, just quick kind of organizational, just for those who don't know, this is kind of an important thing, and this will help explain why UDOT is where it is with some of the active transportation planning. So you all know about WFRC and MAG. There are two other MPOs in the state who handle Cache Valley. Cache has an MPO, and so does Dixie. So I'm not trying to be condescending, just kind of by way of information. But there's this huge space in between all of those MPOs that is the rural part of the state of Utah. And UDOT acts a lot like an MPO in the rural part of the state of Utah. So if you can imagine the square miles there. We kind of cover and act in that role. So just wanted to break that up and kind of show what we're talking about. So for many years, right, UDOT has been focused on building infrastructure throughout the state, mainly on the road system. So just kind of, this is our process that we go through. We're about done. We have one more round of meetings with each of our region offices. UDOT has four regions in the state that covers the whole state of Utah. We have one more round of meetings with our regions that will help prioritize infrastructure projects of all kinds throughout the state. So, and then we'll produce a plan much like the MPOs do. It's mainly a plan that we produce that kind of guides us internally. And we make it public, it's on our website. So we go through the same, a lot of the same steps, right? Identifying needs, meeting with stakeholders. We run a statewide travel demand model that helps us identify needs throughout the state. And we track all of that, much like an MPO does. We've met with various advocacy groups like Bike Utah, I've met with several others about needs throughout the state as far as active transportation goes. We're about done. So let me kind of talk about where we are with active transportation. We're kind of just getting, I won't say we're just getting started. We are just getting started in terms of a long-range plan for active transportation throughout the state. So our first step has been what we call it three different steps. So it was gather, mash, and organize is kind of what we did. So we spent through Heidi and Matt contacting communities throughout the state of Utah in the rural space, trying to find out who had active transportation plans and who didn't, and then bring all of those plans together along with what our stakeholders were telling us and trying to mash it together so that it looked somewhat like a cohesive map of disparate projects throughout the state. So this is kind of a very ugly map made by me of what this kind of looks like. So at this point, we have about 937 projects in the rural space, about 945 miles of projects, and these are projects of various kinds. Everything from just siding roads for a U.S. bike route that connects northern Utah to southern Utah that people take, to improving those connections on the roadway itself, to point projects throughout the state like both Jim and Hugh talked about, improving interchanges and intersections so that those connections can go forward. We don't have an estimated cost right now. That's going to be coming in our next version of the plan, I hope, is that we can start to identify dollars that we need to have identified to help build a lot of these projects. So that's kind of where we're at. It's really kind of in its infancy in the rural part of the state as far as a coordinated, cohesive plan. There's a lot of efforts happening, but I don't know if there's much of a strategy to go forward on implementing all of it, but we're just getting started. So once we kind of get the ball rolling, then this should go really well. It should be really helpful. Let's see. So we'll finish up this fall with our plan and publish it on our website. Any questions or thoughts about kind of where we're at and where we're going? UDOT's just kind of segue into how we're going forward. The last two legislative sessions have changed a lot of UDOT's role in planning in the state. And so we're still working through a lot of those things internally. The 2018 session with SB 136 changed structurally some things within UDOT about how we're supposed to move forward, and then added some funding through the TTIF and TIF pots of money. And then 2019 took another step towards TIF and adding money for active transportation, which I'm sure you're all aware of, and Heidi and several others within UDOT are helping provide administrative rules and policy guidance to UDOT and how we make priorities and begin to allocate those dollars to projects. So So with that, any questions? Anybody? Okay.
Thank you, Chris and Jim and you. I think this is great to see. And in South Weber, we're working on just really one connection, and it's a huge ordeal just to get that one connection and to see you die. And you know, imagine all of these trying to plan these huge systems, and to see this network come together of active transportation is really exciting to see that going on. So we appreciate all your hard work with that. Thank you. All right, which leads into our next presentation by Kaysville. They're going to talk about highlights of their plans to adopt, that they adopted in May 2016 for active transportation.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Joe. I recognize a lot of faces, but for those of you who don't know me, my name is Lyle Gibson. I work with Kaysville City and our Community Development Department. And she doesn't know this, but our mayor over here, Mayor Wynn, I'll invite her to chirp in and chime in any comments or corrections. She's a little more interesting to listen to than I am, but give you a brief overview of what's happening in Kaysville City, talk about our plan and some projects that we've had underway, and attempt to take any questions and help you with that if you happen to have any. So we, as a community, have been doing, I think, little to nothing historically for quite a long time when it came to active transportation. So in 2015, I believe it was, we had some planning commissioners in particular that were very excited about bike lanes and getting more people involved. So mostly due to their efforts and interest, we updated our general plan that said we need to have an active transportation plan. And then we worked with WFRC and were successful in receiving some grant money to hire a consultant to help us put one together. I think we were kind of the poster child at the time. We coordinated with our neighboring city to the south of Farmington and went in together on the grant. We collaborated and did the planning efforts together. And I know it's kind of become a very popular thing where we see a lot of cities that are cooperating together to do planning efforts together. And that made a lot of sense for us at the time. We share borders, what I hear from MAG and WFRC. You know, our populations cross over with each other. They're using the same routes, same trails. And so it made a whole lot of sense for us to do. So March of 2016 is when we finally adopted this. You can see on the left here, previously, that's what the city had planned. And I would say that's probably optimistic for what we had planned. A lot of that came from regional transportation network and priority routes. Some of those lines on the map on the left were what other cities expected we might do and were showing on their plans and other things versus what we ultimately came up with on the right. So we got really excited on a lot of different potential routes for our community. And it was important to us going through the process to make it ours, bottom up rather than top down, what the community wanted, our connections, our efforts. And I think that the plan ended up showing a lot of that. So, racing through it, and there's yours truly up there on one of our bikes. And as we dove into it, as actually surprised what we did have on the ground. As I said, we hadn't done a whole lot of planning or effort in creating some of the network. But luckily, some of our developers, as they've been building the community, had a little more foresight than maybe the city itself. And so they've been proposing and putting in trail networks within Kaysville. So we have previously roughly 13 miles of shared use paths, largely on the west side and the newer sections of our community. That's probably a little optimistic of how much of that is multi-use. A lot of it's horse trails, which I don't know if that counts as active transportation, but obviously you can run and walk on it. Biking is a little more difficult in some stretches. At zero bike lanes, the shared lane was something new where we just put up a sign over one of our bridges to help people cross. And we have a pretty good trail system in our wilderness park to the east. But again, so we found the network that we had, and I just took this random weekday at our school, and we were finding Kaysville City, not unique to Utah, has a very young population. I think, depending on the group I presented to, I changed the numbers. But roughly 30% of our population is under 16 years old. So since I know you guys know how to check all that, you can go correct me there, right? But young population, young families, we're Utah's hometown. I really pride ourselves in that. You still walk, ride your bike to school, it's safe, you can get out. And I don't know how far you can see on this, but is it the big button?
Big fat one, yeah.
So this is one of our junior highs. These bikes wrap all up and down here outside the picture, around through the fence, and they continue to trickle outside there. And that's very common in Kaysville that kids walk and bike to school, and we love that. So you'll find that at any one of our schools throughout the city. And again, this pre-exists our efforts with our active transportation plan. So this was a big element of what we wanted to plan for, is not necessarily the big regional riders, although they're in there, but these younger students and populations, how do we get them around? So, well, that's better. This matches a little bit of our previous maps that you had seen. We're on the left. It shows some of our existing infrastructure. So again, some subdivisions have built some trails. We're fortunate to have the DMGW rail trail come through Kaysville. It's extremely popular, and ETA probably laments how frequently we try to make connections to that, but residents love to use it, and it's a great way to get throughout within the community, but also to other surrounding communities and other destinations. And so we've been working since we implemented this on building new networks. You can see on the right, I tried to highlight what has been done to date. So in red are standard bike lanes that we put on. Yellow are buffered bike lanes. Yellow are shared lanes and shared lanes. And the orange are buffered bike lanes. And we've also done a number of crossing improvements, or in the middle of installing some of those. And so you can see, at least over about 3-year period, we've added over a mile of new shared use path. We have almost 4.5 miles of bike lanes where we had none to start with. And we've got some new shared lanes as well. We continue to expand on that. So we're pretty excited about the change we're seeing. I think our residents are. I remember when we first began striping our first buffered bike lane on Fairville, if you know our area. They had a lot of comments on Facebook and calls coming into the office. We had done the double stripe to create the buffer, but hadn't put in the bike symbols on the road yet. And people kept asking, what's with the carpool lane? Yeah. And they were excited when they found out it was bike lanes. Ever since, I think people have kind of got the expectation that as we do road projects in town, we're at least going to consider, and they hope that we do, add elements of active transportation and bike lanes to it. I think the plans hoped, and I didn't list up here, in our efforts to complete sidewalk networks and improve some of those connections as well. But again, a lot of this, was a great process. We, together with Farmington, Kaysville's about 30,000 people. Farmington's a little over 20. But we had a lot of public involvement through the process when we went through this. And it's probably one of the few planning efforts that I've personally done that was mostly positive. People like to be their nimbyism and really fight different issues, but a vast amount of support and encouragement on these types of plans. Helps to have food at your events. Some of these were shaped like, I think they were feet for active transportation, and I think we had some bike cookies. But we only had hundreds of people come out for a public open house. We had over 1,000 people that left public comment for us on our website through our mapping that helped create this. And because of that, it was easy to get adopted through our city councils. It's been supported by the community since. And I think has overall been pretty successful. So, again, this probably numbers many of you have seen, but gives them some of the information that we collected through that process. A lot of single mothers responded and were interested, mainly, I think, on behalf of their children and having the infrastructure in place for them and what they're utilizing. Of course, everybody likes the safer route, off-street, multi-use type paths over bike lanes wherever possible. And it just comes down to money, right? So, just as a final example, I guess one of the accomplishments that we had is we've been successful in leveraging grants and working with community on getting some of this put into place. So the city's been and better at supporting and funding these projects. We've probably, on the projects that were shown, received a little over $200,000 in grant money through different organizations to help put those in, so that's been very helpful. We've received additional monies for more of the recreation trail types that I haven't talked about. But I've also been surprised at some of the participation of organizations within Kaysville City. So this is one where Utah State University Ponds, which you can see off of the freeway if you ever drive past Kaysville, participated with us and covered the bulk of the funding to pave their trail along the ponds. So that's actually, I rode it on my bike on the way to work this morning, so I didn't come here, but did pedal a little bit, so hopefully that counts. But and so we see this excitement. We've got bike shops in town that really get excited and help us push things along. Schools and other organizations are always willing to provide data and give us what we need to support any of these projects. We just appreciate and look forward to continued cooperation from UDOT and other players. Those are the big issues. I appreciated Jim's comments on, you know, those regional connections, crossing I-15, items like that are still the weaknesses, I guess you could say, in our system, and some of the pinch points on how you get across those freeways that bridge ours as well as many other communities. So I'll conclude with that and appreciate your time. And if there are any questions, let me know.
Thank you so much, Lyle. So of your plan, your active transportation, at what percentage do you think you've completed at this point? Do you have any idea?
So I'd be guessing with you a little bit, but we're probably in the 5 to 10% range. A lot of what we are doing as we implement it is looking at street projects as they come in. So we'll wait till we repay for resurface a road before we do any new striping, unless we know it's going to be, we just probably did it 5 years ago, and we might get another 15 years before we look at it again. We were a little unique on what we put in as well. It's not all paint. We have a lot of bike boulevards identified within ours, which tend to be more permanent type infrastructure improvements beyond just the paint on the street. So bulb outs or pork chop or island dividers and entryways into streets that kind of deter or slow traffic. We've got quite a ways to go. I think when we put this together, our consultant estimated about $30 million worth of improvements. And the crux of that, again, are those I-15 crossings and just the cost that it takes to do them. So those are priority pieces, but also the most difficult to get done and get in place.
All right. Thank you so much, Lyle. Appreciate your presentation.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Okay. Item number 7 is first mile, last mile solutions, and I believe we're starting with Heather.
Good morning. My name is Heather Bending. I'm the project manager for the Tiger Project with UTA. Sorry, I'm getting over a cold, so I might not sound that great. So I'm just going to give kind of a little bit of a background to the project and then kind of an update on where we are right now. So it is a 4-year program starting in 2018. So we have been in it for about a year, year and a half. So the Tiger Grant is administered through STA. And TIGER stands for Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery. And the project goal is to reduce or remove barriers to transit access and transportation corridors in order to connect communities, employment centers, educational institutes, public services, and other community resources. This project will improve safety for pedestrians and cyclists with an emphasis on developing mobility for transportation disadvantaged communities and the creation of liners of opportunity. So UTA was awarded $20 million in Tiger Grant funds. We also have an additional $11.8 million of matching funds, and that's made up of
funding from MAG, WFRC, and UDOT, and then also from local cities, counties, potentially UP Railroad, and then also UTA local funds and Prop 1 funds. So that's a total of $31.8 million in projects, and the way you report to FTA is 161 projects, and I'll show on the next slide how we kind of divide that up. There's an overall project program commitment of $75.7 million. So $43.9 million of that are non-Tiger projects that are managed by other agencies. So we had to complete the environmental work for each of those 161 projects prior to being able to execute the grant with FTA. So the environmental work was completed in January of 2018, and those were a series of categorical exclusions. The grant was actually executed in February 2018, and as I mentioned, it's a four-year program, so we have committed to construction completion by December of 2021. So this shows the breakdown of the 161 projects, the different categories. This is how we report to FTA. The ADA rehab, 60 projects, bike lanes, 13 projects, and the scope of each of these varies as well as the budget, and you'll kind of see when I go through some more specific projects. About 50 of these projects are considered the UTA projects, which are the bike repair stands, also the bike parking lockers, and the bus stop improvements. So those have a smaller dollar value as opposed to like the Lehigh Penn Bridge, which is one project for $5 million. So this map is available on UTA's website. It's interactive. I'm not gonna click on it now. But if you were to go to the UTA website under current projects, you could go to this map and you could click on each different city, and then it'll tell you how many projects are within that city. You can click on it and it'll take you to a map, and then you can also access the environmental document and any concept report that we had to initiate that particular project. So it'll zoom you in to each city when you click on it, and then to each individual project. So the way we have the agreements and contracts set up for this project is, in most cases, there's local city funding to provide the match for the Tiger funding. So we would enter into a stakeholder agreement with each of those cities, and then once we receive their matching funds, that's kind of what kicks off the design of the project. So we have a contract with Civil Science, they're the designer for all of the Tiger projects, and then we also have a contract with Alta Planning and Design, so they're providing active transportation support, so they're doing design reviews and things like that for us, depending on the project. We also have a CMGC contract with Granite Construction, so they're performing all the construction work for all 161 of the projects. And their initial contract was for pre-construction services. So they're involved throughout the design of each of the projects, and they're helping us as we move forward in design and help get an idea of where we're at pricing-wise and are we gonna meet the budget that we have set for the project. Once we have a design for a project and we've agreed on a price with Granite Construction, we enter into a separate construction phase agreement that's specific to that project, or it might be a few different projects that are grouped together because they're with one particular city. And then once that's executed, they have notice to proceed to move forward with construction. So as far as progress, we have 69 projects that are considered to be complete. The majority of those are ADA ramps because those are counted individually, and those are in Bountiful and Farmington.
We've also completed 7 different bike lane projects, and those were in South Jordan, Harriman, and Draper, and then 2 sidewalk projects in Farmington. Currently, we have 3 projects in construction. 2 are close to completion. 1 is the bike lane project in Ogden on Grant Avenue. That should be wrapping up by July. And then we have the Parley's Trail in South Salt Lake. And that one is going to be completed hopefully this weekend. They have 1 more item of work to complete. And then we are also currently working on installing 11 bike share stations up in Summit County. And those are anticipated to be completed in July. Oh. Sorry about that. So we have a lot of things going on right now. We have a lot of projects that are currently in design or ready for construction. This is kind of an overview, but I'm going to go through each of them in a little more detail. So the McVale Crosswalk Project, this is a signalized crosswalk, and you can see from the picture here, it's just adjacent to the tracks. And then the McVale Station is just south of here. So this project was just approved by the UTA board June 5th to go to construction. So we are going to be ordering materials and hopefully starting that work in August. Tooele Bike Lane Project. This is signage and striping of approximately 3 miles of new bike lanes along 100 East and Vine Street in Tooele. And the budget on this is $460,000. We anticipate starting this in the fall, because Tooele is currently working in the area. We also have a bike lane project in Farmington. So this is signage and striping for new bike lanes along Clark Lane and State Street. There's some dedicated bike lanes and then some shared bike lane or shared lanes as part of this project, and it's about $28,000 budget. So this is just an overview of the location of the bike lanes. The Lehigh Pedestrian Bridge, this is the bridge that Jim was mentioning that we're working on over SR-92. The purple line in the picture is the approximate location of the bridge. So it's going to provide that connection of the rail trail and further connection, as Jim mentioned. And then we also have the Murdoch Trail in the area. So we're at about 30% design right now, hoping to start some construction this fall and then finish next spring, summer. This is the Sandy Multi-Use Path Project. Let's see. So north would be to your right here. And when the tracks line was installed in the area, they installed this. So they buried a box structure under the tracks here for future use. So we have a tunnel there that we can expose and provide an east-west connection between 102nd South and the rail trail along the tracks line, as well as trails that continue to the east through Dimpledell. So we're proceeding to 60% design on this right now, and the budget is $3.7 million. We're also currently working in design with Salt Lake City on the Folsom Trail project. So the yellow line shown on the map is the approximate route. It's about 1.2 miles, goes through an abandoned freight corridor. We have some coordination with Union Pacific and Front Runner and other railroads here on a couple grade crossings. So we are moving to 30% design on this project. And then we're also going to be installing a hawk signal in Farmington that is near the Farmington Junior High School. And we're working with the city right now on that to finalize the plans. We are also working with Green Bike to install 7 new Green Bike stations. And the locations are mentioned here. Hopefully we can get these
finalized soon and into construction within the next couple months. There's a lot more projects, but I don't want to talk about every single one, but that's just an update on kind of where we're at right now with design and construction. So any questions? Yeah.
What's that website you said where we can find these?
The WriteUTA.com, UTA's website. If you go under active projects to Tiger, there should be a page for it, and that's an interactive map.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much, Heather. Lots
Thank
of great
you.
Projects going on.
Thank you.
All right, Justin from Ogden City.
First off, I'd like to thank Heather and UTA for the work that they've done on that Tiger grant. That's no small feat to take on that many projects and to dot your I's and cross your T's with all those requirements. So those are great benefits to the communities that they're in. So Scooters in Ogden. We about 45 days ago, we had Lonnie Scooters launch in Ogden. So we have some good, we have some bad, and we have some ugly that's taking place. And so we're going to talk about some of the things that is both, you know, things we need to pay attention to, and also the positives, because there's a lot of positives, and I've enjoyed my time at being able to use these. But here, we're going to watch a video with Lime Scooter puts out, and then we're going to watch a video that's done actually with Austin, Texas, that the CDC did, that I think the data that they have really applies to everywhere where there's scooters.
Someone like the CDC.
In that CDC study, 271 people were looked at for a scooter-related injury that went to a hospital. According to that study, nearly half of them suffered a severe injury. 84% of those were fractured bones, 45% were ligament, nerve, or tendon injuries, and 3% were head injuries. The San Antonio Fire Department has been keeping record of scooter injuries locally since September of 2018. Currently, 148 riders have gone to the hospital for scooter injury. Dr. C.J. Winkler, the deputy medical director of the fire department, hopes to use this data to possibly do a similar study here in San Antonio. He encourages riders to wear a helmet and think of it like driving a car.
Defensive driving. Like, if you get on that and think, you know, what is the safest thing I can do to get to accomplish my task, to get from A to B?
The study also shows that the majority of the injuries happen to first-time riders. How fast the rider is going can also be a factor. John Jackson with the city says these factors will be taken into consideration when presenting to city council next week, one including limiting scooter speed limit to 15 miles per hour and providing more rider education.
Okay, they talked about, I think, some good things. A lot of the injuries are happening to first-time riders. Also, you don't see a lot of people wearing helmets on scooters, partly because it's an opportunity to jump on one. They just don't have one with them. But we also have some problems with other being used to be mistreated. So here's kind of deadly. This was the first weekend we launched. So this is on, was on social media. We got to see this video. You know, look in here. Yeah, so I don't know how many likes they got on their Facebook page or whatever, but I don't know if it was worth it. One of the other problems that I'm seeing is a lot of people are wanting to do skid marks. They're wanting to go fast on them and stop and skid, especially if people are following them. This is in a bike lane, and that's not good. Another one of the things is I've actually been really surprised at the artistic ability that certain individuals have of being able to do burnouts and create art with the back tire. Unfortunately, none of them were appropriate to show today, but then we have to go clean them up. And so one thing that's been good with Lyme is when these things have happened in certain areas, like in these parking structures where they were doing these burnouts, we can go talk to them and say, hey, either they can geofence that area to then have the scooters either be active at a very slow rate or to just shut off completely. So here's some of that. So we have had reports, we've identified T-Rex on scooters in Ogden. We've also identified the Easter Bunny, and there has been a report of Bigfoot / Yeti, though nobody was able to get a confirmed picture of that. So, well, there goes the T-Rex.
Nathan Westmoreland was among the first to hop on e-scooters launched in Ogden.
Yeah!
Dressed up as the Easter Bunny, several strangers recorded him downtown.
Scooters, bunny, sounds like this could go good.
It went well until it didn't.
And I kept flopping around and I was like, oh, go get the car, man. I think I just broke my ankle.
The 19-year-old underwent surgery, getting a metal plate and two screws in his ankle. He's off scooters and everything else for at least 2.5 months.
I feel kind of dumb about it.
Lyme launched 300 new scooters here on Friday. Ogden is the second site for the company in Utah.
I got it literally because we stopped here to eat lunch, and then I didn't want to walk back to the truck in the parking lot behind.
But we wanted to know how many people have been hurt or made a complaint since the e-scooters came to Ogden. Police refused to respond to our multiple requests. However, we spoke to a lot of people who said they've seen risky behavior.
People don't know their limitations, maybe. And, or maybe try to get too rowdy with it.
If you try to mess around too much, you're going to get hurt.
Torn ligaments and broken bones won't stop Westmoreland, though. He's vowed to get back on when he's healed.
I wish I could still ride him, honestly.
In Ogden, Haley Higgins, Fox 13 News, Utah.
So, one of the things is the police didn't know how to code what was going on with the scooter. So when they asked them for all the data, and it had only been 10 days, they didn't have that coded. So one of the things they do now code their calls, and so they've actually had 31 dispatch calls and 3 incident reports. One was a traffic accident, one was damaged equipment, property, another was criminal mischief. Another one, talking to my risk management, they've had 2 calls, and one was opening weekend, and the picture on the right is actually where one of the problems occurred. Somebody, when they sent in the information, they claimed to have been riding in the bike lane and hit a pothole, and I actually think they were riding 2 on a scooter, but that hasn't been confirmed. Then when we went out and looked at it, this is where I believe they crashed. It was right here on the corner going up the ADA ramp there. A pothole had formed. It's about 1.5 inches deep right there. That's what they hit. Broke their collarbone and detached some tendons from there. So just some of the things that happened. But here's the good. And so you can see Mayor Caldwell behind him, is Commissioner Harvey in the background. I think that when you do write down in ties on scooters, that the tie kind of waves in the wind and it attracts cars, and so they pay more attention to you a little bit. So at least the mayor was safe. Here's the data, though, and this is really cool. We've had, in a little over 45 days, over 50,000 rides, 23,000 different riders going over 72,000 miles. So it talks about the time and the distance. Most of the distance are short trips in the downtown. I do think with how Lyme does it, where you, it's a dollar for the to check it out and then 15 cents a minute, a lot of people, I think, run over to lunch or to grab something, just kind of leave the scooter getting metered and jump on back and because it's cheaper. But you can definitely see the number of rides. You can tell where the weekends are and where good weather is. They definitely jump up on that. So this is very significant use. Here is a map, and this was June 10th, was the ride map. And so one thing that's nice is Lyme, I have a lot of meeting on the administrative tools app that they have that I can get in and monitor what's going on. And so this is the downtown area is just getting used like crazy. It's been also on the Parkway River Trail gets used a ton. You can see they're just getting ridden all over in a day. Had reports of very similar incidents happening in Ogden. And again, I think it goes right back to first-time riders. Get on and do it someplace that's not in the roadway the first time. And also, it's use them correctly. One of the things is kids shouldn't be on them, and I see more kids on them going around than I do see adults. And then also, people try to pack as many as they can on there. It seems like, you know, three or four people, it just doesn't work, and it's just not safe. But the people who use them correctly, it sure is seems like it's going quite well. We've had people show up at council meetings and complain, but mainly their complaints are people riding them on sidewalks that are going too fast. So, any questions?
Thank you, Justin. Just how fast do those scooters go?
15 miles per hour, what they're allowed to go on.
Thank you.
They
yeah, that's what I was. Can they go faster than that?
They can, but in our agreement, we did a 90-day agreement with Lyme to kind of see how things are, and so we have them set that to no faster than 15.
Okay, thank you. All right, Provo, you're up. Who's seeing Austin Taylor?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here with everybody. My name is Mayor Cavusi. I'm the mayor of Provo, and I brought with me my sustainability coordinator, Austin Taylor. He comes with many gifts and talents, which one of is active transportation. He's the guru of that. So he was a great hire for me. We never had one in Provo, but I saw the need and went to bat to get him, and I'm really glad I did. We would like to talk a little bit about Provo. Many of you know we have the bus rapid transit system, which has just been a hit. We love it. We're proud to have it. But again, one of the problems is similar to what many of you have talked about, the first and last mile. We've talked about it. Provo is fairly conservative, in case you didn't know. And to make change in Provo takes a minute. You have to vet. You have to take it to the public. You have to bet again, you have to take the public again, and then when you make a change down in Provo, you still get just beat up. But we're to the point where we're ready to do it. We're excited, it's time. Our UBX is being utilized constantly, but again, we're hearing the first and last mile is where our weakness is, so we don't want a weakness. So we're here to solve that problem. We'd like to talk just a little bit about the direction we're headed. And Austin will take it after I do a little introduction. So we're in the early phase, and thank you so much. It's fascinating. You start looking into these, and you do see the good, the bad, and the ugly. You just have to Google it, and it's a little overwhelming, right? And I actually got an email from my friend, the Nashville mayor. I don't know if you're aware of his, who was on CNN and Fox News yesterday, and literally decided to outlaw scooters because of all the accidents and injuries in Nashville. I don't know if that'll hold or how long it will last, but it was an interesting decision he decided to make. but we're going opposite. We're ready to explore them. We're ready to take a shot at it and see how we do. Our target market is visitors and students. Brigham Young, we have Brigham Young University in our city, and we also have UVU, basically bookends. So we have two colleges and universities that bring students, tens of thousands of students that we feel will utilize this. We've had multiple pitches from various companies, and so it's fun to hear what other companies, people are using, different cities. We've kind of decided to do go a different direction than Lime and Bird. We've brought everyone to the table. I mean, Austin's worked really hard at this. I've questioned everything, which is probably really annoying to him. But I've brought the police, the public works, the administration, the economic development, everyone to the table and said, let's put it up on the whiteboard. What could go wrong? And how are we going to address it? And we just really have dug deep, and we've decided to go with Zaxter. So I'll turn the time over to Austin and let him kind of tell why we decided to go that direction. Then we'll go through a little short presentation if you have any questions.
And I don't know if any of you caught the Alfred Hitchcock reference there with Bird scooters. So it was before my time the Bird came and presented, but from what I understand, they told the mayor, we can drop these off in your streets overnight if you tell us to. And so the city was like, whoa, hold back there. Let's give it a minute first. So we got a bunch of people together in our city, all the stakeholders, and talked about what we wanted to see in a bike share and scooter share program. We got a request for proposals together and then published it. UTA sent us a letter after we published it. They saw it. They said, we're supportive. We'd like to see you going for these first mile, last mile solutions. We would prefer that you use Green Bike, but we will be supportive with what you choose. So we published it, and we got four different companies that wanted to operate in our city. So there was Zaxter, Gotcha, Lime, and Veoride. Some of these are familiar. Lime operates in Ogden and in Salt Lake City. Zaxter operates in St. George and over 400 other communities throughout the country. They're in universities, they're in corporate campuses, they're in cities as well. So when we were looking at all these proposals, we had a list of criteria that we would go over. We wanted to see a company that was not only experienced, but also cared about the project and cared about keeping it organized. Everybody had concerns about scooter parking, where are these going to end up? Will they be picked up at night? And one of the great things about Zaxter is that they pick up every scooter every night, not by users, but by employees. With Bird and Lime, they depend on whoever wants to sign up to pick them up. And so it can be a little bit more hectic. And as we talked with the city of St. George about their experience with Zaxter, they just said so many great things about them. And so we felt very comfortable in selecting Zaxter for this. Zaxter is, they operate spin scooters. Spin is owned by Ford, and so you'll see the orange logo spin. I believe Salt Lake City is getting spin scooters as well, 500 of them from what I saw. So they're hoping to start out with 200 scooters and 100 bicycles, and they'll have the ability to go up to 500 scooters as the use allows. This is a program that's coming at no cost to the city. The scooters are dockless, bikes are docked, and it's typical pricing that you see here in Salt Lake. For a scooter, you unlock it for $1, it's 15 cents a mile after that, or minute, I forget. And then Zaxter, with the bike share, it's, I believe it's $1 to unlock it, and then again, you pay per minute that you use it. So that's all I have. Do you have any questions about this program? It should be launching this summer. We haven't signed the contract yet, but it will come out sometime this summer. We're hoping August, July, somewhere in there.
Why do you think they're building Green Bike to gas? Is that sort of going up lost in front? Is that still a possibility?
Yeah, that's a great, and I knew someone was going to ask that question. I love Green Bike. I think Green Bike is a great system. In the end, it came down to funding. So as I've looked at annual reports of Green Bike, in this area, it's been subsidized to $2 to $3 million since its since its beginning, and we just didn't have that kind of money to invest in the stations that it takes to put in Green Bike. And when we saw that Zach Street could implement a similar system, a docked system, for free to the city, and we could spend the little money that we have on bike infrastructure instead, we choose to go with that route. It is a one-year pilot. If at the end of the 1 year we feel like this is not a good company, the option is still open. But we're pretty firm on this decision, and we think it's going to be good.
Thank you so much, Austin. Mayor Papoosi, appreciate your presentation. We're almost to the end of our meeting. We have a couple more things to get through, but if you need to go, please don't feel like you need to be excused. So next we will have Ben with Green Bike.
Everybody's trying to get out of here. Do you want me to do this next time, or do you want me to try and sit through this?
Oh, we're good.
Okay. All right, try to go fast. All right, so we have big milestones. 7 year with bikes on the ground. At Celebrate, we actually went around and talked to members of the community, our board, and we said, what are the words that come to mind when you think about Green Bike? These are what came up. Active, transit, reliable, affordable, safety, and community. We're making sure that these are the words that people continue to use when they describe us as we expand, because it's going to be a very big year. So far, every bike is used about twice a day over the last 6+ years. We sold more passes in 2018 than we did in 2017. Scooters launched in about June of 2018 in Salt Lake City. We are on a trajectory at that point to do about 10% more in ridership and sales by the end of the year than our previous year. However, by the end of the year, we ended up doing only about 2% better in sales, and we did about the exact same in ridership. So it didn't really hinder the organization, but it did prevent some of our growth. Essentially, some of the recreational riders are now using a scooter instead, but our annual users didn't change. Each station averages about 8,000 checkouts and returns a year, and of the thousands of people that we've surveyed, less than 1% have ever rated our maintenance as poor. The majority of our operating revenue, we don't get any public money to cover the operating expenses. The majority of it comes from our title sponsor, which is Select Health. Just this Monday at our board meeting, we signed a new 3-year agreement with Select Health for $1.42 million, which is a 468% increase over our original investment from Select Health. And we're doing a lot more engagement events this year. There are 18 different ones. I won't go through them all individually, but we participate in Mayor's Bike to Work Day. We are at the Pride Festival, Farmers Market. We have an event coming up in July called the Basket Bowl, where again, trying to embrace that theme of community, that it's a station-to-station scavenger hunt race where participants fill the Green Bike baskets with clothing and hygiene items that we'll then donate to the VOA's Youth Resource Center. And the goal is just to promote the VOA's safety in Salt Lake City's infrastructure. But they don't make these for short people. Okay. One of the other things that we have is of the 370-odd bikes that are in our system, we have one uniquely designed bike called our Community Bike. We work with a local nonprofit. They get to design it however they want. Every time that bike is ridden, we give a dollar to that organization. First 2 years, it was the Make-A-Wish Foundation bike, and then it was the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art bike. As of next week, it will be the Craft Lake City bike. If you're not familiar, Craft Lake City has about 300 exhibits a year, 20,000 attendees, and it's about promoting local artists, scientists, and engineers. They really believe in local stuff, and I just wanted to show that one of the things they have on their website is more investment in extra tax revenues for local governments. I thought this group would enjoy that. A lot of upcoming press, but we can skip that for time. If you want to see, go to our website. We have all of the press that we've ever had. We're really leaning into affordable housing this year and over years to come. We currently have 2 Green Bike stations at 2 of the arts-based developments. There are 3 arts-based developments in Salt Lake City. Those are apartments. They're for 35 to 55% of area median income. We provide free transportation to everybody that lives there. We also have projects coming up this year with Give Communities and EcoBox. Those are 100% affordable housing, and we'll be providing the same free transportation. They're sponsoring the station. That's how we cover the expenses. And then Palmer Court will have a station located near there, which is transitional housing, and that will be later this year. For those that won't be living in those communities, we're rolling out our equity pass this September, and that means that you can come into the Green Bike offices and you can pay $5 for a whole year's worth of transportation. You can pay in cash so the unbanked community can participate.
No credit card is needed, no cell phone is needed. Some of our new products coming out this year, starting in August, all annual users will be able to take out the bikes for 12 hours at a time. Currently, each annual user pays $75. At the end of the day, they actually only pay about $35 after all discounts are factored in, but they can take the bike out for an hour at a time. Now they can take out the bike for 12. It allows you to go somewhere where there isn't a station, you can take your bike home overnight. Each bike has a cable lock inside of it, so if you do take it somewhere that you're out, it's middle of nowhere, you're not worried that somebody else can walk up and take your scooter or other dockless device. You can actually tether it to something and ensure that you will have transportation to get back home. We're doing a 70% expansion this year of our system. It's starting in August. It's thanks to Tiger and county funding and a little bit of CMAQ. We're hitting affordable housing, workforce housing, market rate apartments, multiple track stops. We're expanding the North Temple Front Runner Station, the Salt Lake Central Station, Liberty Park, 9th and 9th, Salt Lake County offices, and multiple stations along the North Temple corridor. This August, we're going to have e-bikes for the first time. Lime dropped e-bikes in Salt Lake around December and then pulled them in February. Lime's pretty much pulled their e-bikes everywhere across the country, I think just leaning more into the scooters. But these bikes are really, really great. They're made by Trek. They've taken a long time to really get a bike share product right. And I think it's more complicated than I would have guessed it was. New York actually put out a few thousand e-bikes for their city bike program this year, and they had to pull all of them due to a braking issue. And those will be included with the annual pass. The rates will stay the exact same this year. In 2020, we'll be adding 3 to 4 new stations, more apartments, Marmalade Library, track stops, ballparks, and more apartments. And we're almost done. New partnerships that we're doing. We're now a presenting sponsor of the Twilight Concert Series. Hopefully that gets us some Ogden Twilight, because I've heard that's pretty fun. You, Justin. And then our other recent partnerships, anybody that gets a high pass in Salt Lake City gets free green bike included with it. That will include the e-bikes and the 12-hour passes. You get a UTA's high pass card sent to you in the mail, and that comes with a green bike RFID sticker on the back. So even if you don't have a smartphone, one card gets you access to bus, rail, and bike share. We just sent out a press release about our partnership with Dominion Energy. We just signed a 5-year contract with the LDS Church to provide stations on North Temple and Main Street, North Temple and 2nd West. It'll be providing free transportation to the roughly 3,000 office goers. We're doing another thing with Lyft again and the Ditch Your Car program. And then what we've really found successful in the last about 18 months were new partnerships with private developers. There's currently development happening all over the state, but in Salt Lake, with the new mix of transportation options, something that they seem to find very compelling is a permanent piece of infrastructure and that they can control the aesthetic of the environment. So we now have multiple agreements with CW Urban, multiple agreements with Clearwater Homes, Gift Communities, PG Development, Wasatch, and each one of those is about $50,000. That's a quick green bike update. I know we're 5 minutes over, but that was really fast.
Just, there's a green bike day.
Thanks, Dave. There's a free green bike day, June 22nd?
Next Saturday.
Thanks.
And we've got the code here.
Oh, thank you. Any other questions, comments?
Cool.
We're going to start working on the ILA in the next week or so, and yeah, hopefully we can get Ogden up next year. Should be a lot of fun. And yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you for all the presenters. This is a great opportunity for cities to take note of what does work and what doesn't, and for further implementation in their own cities. So appreciate your time with that. Real quickly, do we have any program updates? Okay, hearing none, we will go back to item number 9, and I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Okay, Mayor Witt, and a motion and second. Joe Taylor will second it, so. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Meeting is adjourned. Thanks so much for coming, and remember to sign in.